the fact of the matter is, Tom, that when you're involved in government contracting, you are negotiating all the time. You're always going up against people, whether it's a contracting officer if you're with a company, or it's a company if you're a contracting officer, or it's subcontractors with primes. You are constantly negotiating. And the more you know about the people across the table, the people that you are negotiating with, the better you're going to do.
Are you talking about more than just business intelligence in the case of other bidders?
Well, it's funny. In the old days, that's about all you would get when you would call people to get the book on somebody. But now, with all the social media out there, it's sometimes astounding what people will put on things like Facebook and other things out there, and what you can learn about someone, maybe too much information, quite honestly. But frankly, you're looking for business intelligence. You want to know what his or her opponents think of them. You want to know if they're the kind of people that treat you fairly, or if they're screamers, or if they always resort to threats in their negotiations. You just want to know what you're dealing with before you go in, so you're not surprised.
In your column, you use a pretty good analogy of a purported incident that happened with General Patton, as depicted in the famous movie Patton.
In El Alamein, when the German tanks were retreating, Patton yells, Rommel, you magnificent bastard, I read your book. And I'll never forget that scene. And whether it happened or not, it sure was a great scene. And when I've deposed people in the past, when you've met with them, sometimes these are people who really have quite a track record and have left quite a trail. And it might be a positive trail. They've written books. They've written articles. You want to know about those before you're going to deal with them. I was listening to a radio program today, and it talked about how Urban Meyer prepares for upcoming football games. Now, as an example, we all know that he played against Oregon in the national championship last night. As an example, at some point in the last couple of years, he spent 10 days with Oregon's former coach learning about the Oregon system. This is a guy who understands the necessity, the absolute need for preparing and understanding the adversary.
Are there specific actions you can take? For example, you mentioned earlier if someone is a screamer in meetings, and we've heard that the Iranian foreign minister is a screamer, and he's been negotiating for months and months and months and months with John Kerry over their whatever they're trying to negotiate with Iran on the nuclear deal and so forth. How can you use information like that that is personality-based?
Well, that is a great question, and it's something we talk about in negotiation circles all the time. Richard Holbrooke, who died a couple of years ago, was quite a negotiator for the State Department and for the Clinton administration. And he used to match his personality with the people across the table. If they screamed, he would start to scream. Now, other people would take a different view of that. They would let the screamer scream and pound, and then they could try and embarrass them a little bit. So just having the ability to plan what you're going to do when they do something is a magnificent advantage if you're going into an important negotiation. Holbrooke would also delegate certain people on his team to handle certain issues if they came up, and they were the right people to deal with them, and he called it the theater of negotiations. He would simply, he'd give them quite a lead-in and build them up, and then they'd say what they were going to say. So the ability to prepare in advance for people that you're going to be dealing with, the screamers, the table pounders, that is a very important thing to know about, because if we've all seen it. We've all been surprised when someone loses his or her temper and pounds the table or screams or walks out or whatever that they do. But if you've got the book on them in advance, that makes a huge difference.
So you could really plan your strategy. In one case, it would be to intimidate them by also pounding on the table. The other could be more like jiu-jitsu, let their own forward momentum carry them right over the edge.
Yeah, you can. You can let them self-destruct. The point that you've got to remember, and I try to make this in the second commandment, is that in most cases, we're talking about a business relationship. So pounding a table and screaming really isn't usually very conducive to reaching a good result. It burns bridges. It requires you to devote a lot of time to mend the fences or repair the bridges that have been burned. And this stuff isn't going to work. Now, so for example, if someone is a screamer and a pounder, you let him or her scream and pound, and then you say, look, Charlie or Charlotte, this isn't going to get us anywhere. We're here to do a job, and now you've kind of put them in their place and sit them down and make them sit down. It's amazing. It takes the air out of their balloon. If they realize, if they believe that you are now afraid of them, and they're going to act like a type A and roll over you, you've got a problem. Knowing what people are going to do in advance, knowing what their MO is a huge advantage. And even if I'm a neophyte in the business, I've got bosses who probably dealt with the people I'm going to be dealing with. My bosses should be telling me what to expect and how to deal with it.
We're speaking with Tim Sullivan, a partner at Thompson Coburn, and also writing a series at Federal News Radio that you can read at federalnewsradio.com, The 10 Commandments of Federal Contracting. And you relate an anecdote in which it paid to go above the person that you were just getting nowhere with. And sometimes you do have to escalate it in terms of rank.
Well, that's true. Now, the third commandment is going to be thou shalt start as low as possible, and I'm a huge subscriber to that particular philosophy. I hate going over my opponent's head. Generally, my philosophy has always been to resolve things at the lowest level possible. But when you realize that you're not going to get anywhere with the people you're dealing with, and there's only, and you've given them every chance to show, you've given them every good faith opportunity to deal with the problem, then and only then you can go over their heads. And so the anecdote I relate in this second commandment really is about something that happened a long time ago where we started at the bottom and we worked our way up and we were pounding our head against the door and the wall, basically. And finally, we asked for an opportunity to meet with the director of contracts of this organization. He was fairly new, a month or two into the job, but he'd been at the Pentagon for years in the Air Force with senior positions. He had a great reputation. And although I had never met him, I was able to call people who had worked with him, who had worked against him, and I got the book on him. And the book basically told me, look, this guy is very tough and he's very smart, but he prides himself on his reputation for fairness. Well, that was worth millions to us because for our 30-minute presentation, we pounded on the concept of fairness and the word fair. And a couple of days later, we did very well. Now, it was a matter of having the inside information to be able to, all properly obtained, to know what to expect and how to make the pitch.
And you also make a pretty cogent warning, which we've heard in other areas, but probably very much worth repeating. And that is when doing the background search, when trying to find out information about the adversary, be very wary of how you use email.
Yeah, email, as we all know, is one of the great developments of the last 20 to 25 years, but it's also one of the great dangers out there. And you lose control of it once you hit the send button. And so in my commandment, I say, look, pick up the phone and call somebody. Talk to them in a different way. Look the people up on Facebook if you want to. But don't send an email to someone that you think is a friend and say, hey, I've got this meeting or this negotiation coming up with Joe Smith. What can you tell me about him? Because the next thing you know, Joe Smith might get a copy of that, and you've got a problem.
Yeah, it's really out there in the ecosystem. All right, so in doing research, then where do you begin, and how do you know when you've got enough?
Well, you never know when you've got enough, but I start with the phone. I start with the people in my own organization who have met or dealt with these people or who know people who have met or dealt with them, and then I network. And it's probably an exercise that's going to take an hour or two or more, but all well worth it. But the phone is what I work the most to get people to tell me what's going on, or in person. That's the way I trust doing this.
And can this also work in reverse? If you know you have a reputation for a certain way, if you really work hard, you can maybe not be that way, expecting your adversary to expect you to be that way.
Absolutely. If you know you have an information and you realize you're realistic enough to know that people are going to be getting the book on you, you can surprise them. You can use sports analogies all day long, but if they're expecting a running game, you blitz them with passes on the first possession. So, yeah, you can use it almost as disinformation to throw them off and act in a way that is totally contrary to what you've done before. Now, generally, what good negotiators do is they don't lose their temper. They don't pound their fists. They work to resolve things in a very reasonable way. And when they do get angry, they do it in a way that stays controlled. And it's a way that usually puts the other people on their heels. As a really nice person or a really nice woman all of a sudden gets angry about something, but always controlling their anger.